Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
How's it going?
Very good, thanks.
How are you?
Very good, thank you. Good to see you. We're here in a studio based in London, and I'm here with Matt and Dom from Muse, and it's all happening. As of today, it's all happening.
That's
again.
It. Great to see you again. Every time we see you, we know it's happening.
Yeah. It's good for me. It's good for the audience. I know there's millions of people all over the world who are tuning in right now and are going to be listening to this again, and because the anticipation for your return has been huge, but you always surprise people. I mean, this for a lot of fans, the vibe is that this has kind of come out of nothing. You know, hey, Chris. I know you've been building on this for a long, long time, but does it feel kind of like a tipping point, per se, today?
It does come around surprisingly quickly, doesn't it? But it's great. Like, this is the first interview we've done, I suppose, today.
Yeah. And, the first time... Forgive us for being a little bit...
Yeah, and,
out of shape.
And we obviously announced the song for the Olympics today at this press conference thing we did, so it's the first time we've kind of showed any music to kind of, I suppose, the public realm.
Yeah, we did a little trailer thing, which is the went on YouTube, didn't it? That's like an excerpt of one of the tracks that's on the album. Mm-hmm. We sort of threw that as a little kind of taster to give an idea that the album's got some different faces to coming, you know. Yeah. But today's the first thing first time that you're playing, anyone's playing a full song, if you like. Yeah. Mm.
I know. And what a tune! I mean, we're gonna play it again soon, you know. And this is all part of kind of a big return for you guys on Radio 1-2. A lot of people listening, so we'll get to the tune, we'll get to the teaser, and we're not going to go too deep into the album because I know that you're not even there yet. It's almost there.
Yeah, literally today we're just putting together a track listing and picking the final mixes and all that stuff.
But that's the exciting part, though, right? Yeah, that's got to be the exciting part.
Yeah, it's great. You know, it's the chance to listen back to all that work. It's been... How long have we been making it?
It's 6 months.
Six months, on and off.
That, I think. October.
On and off.
Rehearsals and because then Chris, you broke it. You told us on radio that when you were going to start the record, and that kind of, I suppose, in a way...
Yeah, well, I think we did Reading Festival, and then... I mean, last year was, kind of a year off with a few gigs thrown in, but it was always going to be the end of the year that we'd get together. And I think we started rehearsing in October, just going through some ideas, and that all kind of came together pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And, by November, we felt like, it's time to record now and crack on with it. So it's been, 6-7 months of recording, I think.
Yeah. I mean, amazingly quickly, when you consider the expansiveness of the record and the way it sounds. I mean, anyone expecting this sort of, understated acoustic follow-up to Resistance is going to be sorely disappointed. I mean, there is definitely, from what I've heard, getting to the first official single, which I don't even think has been announced yet, so I'm not going to name it. But, I mean, I've heard that, and that's different, and it's mellow, and it creeps up towards a big explosive ending. But, the first thing today, is huge. I mean, sounds like war breaking out, basically.
Well, the Olympic track.
Yeah,
it's great. I mean, that song, someone approached me, I can't say who, but about a year ago to write a song for the Olympics, and we were going to work on it, and I'll give you a clue, it involved a good pianist. Right. And so I wrote this song in mind with the idea of playing with a pianist, and obviously that's why it's got a lot of guitar and piano playing at the same time, which normally I don't do. And then that kind of went away for whatever reason, and then
went away in the sense that you would have continued working on that song and it would have been faithful to the album whether the Olympics had come back or not.
I sort of put it together, and it sounded like it was going to be a good song anyway. At that point, I didn't really have lyrics anyway. It's just like a sort of epic sort of musical idea, if you like, involving a choir and stuff. And but then as time went on, then when we got asked to play the ending ceremony, that by that point the song had developed, So we sort of said, we've got to play this, we've got to play this at the ending ceremony. So we got them in to listen to it, and then the Olympic people loved it and said they'd love to use it as the official, tune, So
and had you approached the lyrics with the Olympics in mind at that point, even though it had gone away? Had you gone back in and gone, well, I'm going to be faithful to the original?
No, the way the music developed was the lyrics are just about that, trying to get into that zone of what it is to be completely determined to win, against all the odds and all that kind of stuff, and the conviction and but also the sort of the more dark, I don't want to say dark side, but the more like the truth of what it, because some people could write a song about Olympics and it will be very sort of like it's all be all encompassing, all embracing,
but it's actually about winning.
And the thing is, I think I wanted to make a song that just tuned into that part of it, like the real competitive side, it is a competition, so I kind of wanted to capture that that side of it,
to see the finished result visually as well, and to know that whoever put that to get the mega montage, as they called it, has really captured that side of the song too. Because I mean, it's a very uplifting watch, but it is really showing, as you say, athletes and competitors at their most brutal.
Definitely
on every level.
So this song, and plus the prelude, obviously we're gonna play it again now on Radio 1. We're gonna come back and continue to catch up with Muse, who are officially back with the album due out soon, and here it is right now. This is the Olympic song, Survival plus Prelude, right now on Radio 1. Alright, so we got Matt and Chris and Dom here, and we're in a recording studio where finishing touches are being put on your forthcoming new album, The Second Law. Everyone knows it's called that because you used YouTube for what it's for, put up a teaser and had some fun with that. I mean, it was just so classic music, wasn't it, when you saw it, and it's like this newsreader just telling us that the whole world's going to come to a crushing demise, and then in comes this crunching dubstep, and I'm like, oh, the boys are back, that's good. You know, obviously you've been having fun making this record and stepping aside from people's expectations and your own.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we definitely tried a bunch of new things, and that trailer sort of gives a glimpse of that. There's only one song that's like that, you know, where we've obviously tried to do kind of what Rage Against the Machine did with hip hop in the sort of 90s. We've sort of taken an influence from a bit of the sort of electronic world, dubstep and stuff, but played it with real instruments, you know, to sort of give it a different twist. But there's only really that song that's like that. You know, the rest of the album is very, very diverse. I mean, you've heard, obviously, some of it.
Must have been fun to work on that track, though, in particular, you know, because obviously I know you guys have, have been into that kind of music for a while, and to be able to approach it like a band and just approach it like, you know, with guitars and bass and drums, and, you know, especially with you, because the drums are so important to that side of electronic music, to try and play that kind of rhythm must have been fun.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, what you find with some of those, with like the drums, I suppose, with some of that music, it's actually quite simple, and like all the weird stuff is happening with the bass and the guitars, you know, all the kind of those, you know, the wobble basses and triplet feels and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, these guys worked pretty hard getting the kind of the weird way the guitar and bass works with each other. How the hell they work together?
Interesting live, that one, huh?
Oh, it'd be great. I'll just have to go mental on the whammy pedal, you know?
You talked about Rage Against the Machine, and I thought, while I've got you here and we're sort of playing catch-up before we talk about the album in more depth at some point in the future, you got a chance to play with them last year as one of those few shows you talked about, which I haven't spoken to you since then, and that must have just been a remarkable experience for you to be able to go out and play with a band that really were instrumental in helping you form in the first place.
I think it's the second time we've played with them. I think we played, was it 2007, when they first reformed? Mm-hmm. And we, you know, it was their first gig in how many years? I don't know.
Was that one of the bass player jumped on the, was that in Italy?
No, it was in Vegas, I think. And that's the one. And that was obviously amazing, because no one knows how the reunions ever end up, you know. Sometimes they're tragic, sometimes they're brilliant. So to get to do it again was, you know, I mean, just, we love them, you know, they're just such an incredible live band, and you know, to be stood side stage watching it, I don't think I've ever seen a band with that much power in such a stripped down way as well, you know. I mean,
well, just good to be fanboys, you know, and you've got so many people out there that feel that way about your band, and to be upside of stage watching a band that changed your lives, you know, must have been.
Yeah. I mean, that was the weird thing. I mean, it's amazing to be asked to play with them, but to actually realise that they were actually fans of our band. That was the surreal thing.
That's on some bizarre 360 degree, like you plant a seed at Reading Festival and then like 15-20 years later you're like, oh, this is strange. I mean, that must have been a moment of clarity in a way.
It was weird, because we met them in Germany, didn't we, at Rock and Ring, and like did that picture with them, and we were like, wow, that's cool. But it was hard for us to ever try and, for them to say, oh, we love your band, man. It's hard for us to ever try and say to them, well, you've got no idea how much we do love your band now, but obviously used to when we were young, and how much of an influence you were, and that kind of thing. So, you know,
I've actually exchanged numbers with Tom Morello, and every now and again I get a text from Tom Morello, and I just, every time I see it, I go like, no, that can't be, something's not right here. It can't be right.
I'd love to know what name that's under in your phone, man. Because I bet it's not Tom Morello, bracket Rage, in bracket. I get a few words about the album, because fans will want to know, and we're going to get talking more depth about it when it's finished, but just more sort of the setup and the making of it over the last 6 months. I mean, what were some of the key sort of ideas or words or even just melodic reference points you had to go on and make this kind of record?
Wow. Caught off guard there. I mean, obviously we're still in the process of finishing it, so it's, we don't talk too much about it at this stage, but it's, you know, there's, it's just, I don't know what to say, it's very diverse. I mean, I said you've heard some of it. There's a bigger emphasis on groove, definitely. We've always tried to improve the groove with every album we've done, but this time I think we've nailed it on a couple of tracks where the groove is actually the thing that's the best thing about the song, you know. Obviously the song you play today has got nothing.
it does though, because I mean, you know, you two have always had that groove very much inherently in what you do, and I think, you know, that you've always been what they call the pocket, you know, and you're very much in the muse pocket, which allows, you know, you, Matt, to obviously with the rest of the guys, but to go completely crazy over the top, you know. But the groove on Survival is very much in it, just it retains and it holds its own for everything else to go crazy on it. Let's talk a little bit more about that song in particular, because obviously it's the one we're playing tonight. You know, you working with the choir and pushing it out there and being even more sonically adventurous in terms of the width of the sounding of the record. I mean, does it get more and more challenging the more you try and take on, or do you understand it more?
I've learned a lot more about that. I mean, these days with you know, the kind of computer setups you can have, you can access a lot of sort of virtual instruments, you know. And then even though the whole album we've done it all for real, from the composing point of view, you can do a lot of that stuff and test it out before you actually go into the studio with a full choir. So that, you know, it just makes it a lot easier doing it.
Trying to rein that in though and get it down to a condensed piece of music that mixed sounds good in small speakers as it does in the studio here where it's been trained.
Oh, you've got to make it sound good on a little iPhone speaker.
Exactly. I think I might actually melt my iPhone if I try and play that right now. But it launches out at you, you know, and that must again create some unique challenges, because you seem to, what I'm trying to say is, you seem to be raising the bar every time. I thought Resistance was nuts, you know. This record is sonically and ideas-wise and sound-wise even bigger.
That's just what we do, isn't it? At some point it's going to, I don't know, I can't imagine.
Implode?
Implode, is that possible? I know, I'd like, you know, the other track you've heard, you've heard is what's going to be the main single, if you like. That track is, I think it's pretty stripped down, minimal for what we do, you know. So I think there's a couple of tracks where we've captured that other side. But I'd say Survival, though, interestingly, this Olympics track, I think is pretty much, I'm not sure if you can go much further than that, you know, in terms of in terms of sort of silliness, craziness, and you know
epicness
and all those words, you know. But
I don't know, I suppose we're always just constantly trying to raise the bar, you know. Every time we kind of start working on tracks, like Chris said, what we were doing last October, you know, it's just about, you know, trying to make it better than what we've done before. And as long as we're kind of feeling like that's where we're going and that's the direction we're heading in, then we're happy. And
again, it's always cool though when you start trying new things. I mean, we've obviously done the strings before, but you know, on this album we did the choir, and then there's some tracks where we've gone brass as well, and these are all things that are kind of brand new to us. And
saxophone solo.
We've got a little brass, jazzy brass number, haven't we?
Yeah.
I think you heard that track. It's a bit
very underrated brass, I think, in the modern day music.
No, we've brought brass back on this one.
Bringing brass back. Quote. Thank God I don't work for a magazine, mate. Otherwise, that's your headline.
I tried to get a sax solo, by the way. I was pushing for the sax solo.
It's a very fine line, I think, with sax.
the solo is one step too far, but a nice little.
But who dares wins, man? I mean, seriously, the people who've gone in and put the sax solo out there have created some of the most iconic musical moments in history.
I know.
Stand up ballet.
We're on holiday recently, and
I just think of Kenny G.
I was in Greece, and someone had Dire Straits on, and what's that? They've got a whole song that's just like a trumpet. A saxophone solo. Go do 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 do. It's so like, it just makes me think of Romancing the Stone. You know that film?
Very much. It's a very 80s thing. Yeah, we've never been able to shake it. But you guys aren't adverse to a little 80s in your music, surely?
A whisper here and there, never hurt anyone.
Yeah. Well, that's the song that we're talking about. It's got a slight 80s. Twinge to it, I suppose, but
he actually flinched when he said that.
Have you heard that one?
We haven't heard it. But yeah, we had a nice little horn section, some like old boys from like Chicago or somewhere.
The lead trumpet player was.
Oh, I have. This is the disco joint. This is the one that's kind of quite disco-y.
Exactly.
You're underselling it. You're making it feel like it's like a supergroup featuring Kenny G, Otmar Liebert, and someone else. But
the lead trumpet player was the same guy who played on Superstition. There you go. Yeah.
Well, that's not brass, is it?
And that guy, and the. What was it I was going to say? Yeah, it's 40 years. That was it. He pointed out that when this album comes out, it's 40 years almost to the month, I think, that when Superstition came out.
Wow.
Which is great. We've got the same guy playing. And, it's a similar riff, actually. It's got to be said.
Now, you know, I don't want to try and protect you from, you know, anything, but let's just hold a hold back on that conversation. Stevie Wonder's publishers will be in touch. So, listen, we've got plenty of time to talk in the future about the album, and I'm looking forward to doing that, and I'm looking forward to hearing it. You know, I can't wait. Yeah. We'll talk about what the second law is from your perception, and we'll talk about, you know, some of the journey in more sort of detail about the songs. I will get literally lynched if I don't bring up the L word, which is live, and I know you've already put a few, you know, a few sort of like dates up, and it's starting to build. Will the diary fill quickly, and will it be an extensive world tour? Because you've always been very thorough about your touring.
Yeah. It's full.
We're full up to 2014 already.
Yeah, I could probably tell you what we're doing up till December 2014. Right. I know. Well,
no, not 14,
April.
13. Yeah.
But
how did you feel when that was presented to you? I know that you love to tour and play live, but you know, everyone, you know, priorities change and shift over time. How did you feel when you saw that?
Well, it's always a bit daunting, but at the same time, you're so excited to play that you sort of, you know, those two things cancel each other out. But
it goes very quick once you get on the road. That's the thing. I mean, you sort of look at the list before you go out, and it's just pages and pages, and you think, wow, you know, it's 2 years of your life planned out. And then you go on tour, and then it's kind of over before you know it. I mean, when we did Reading Festival, that pretty much marked 2 years of touring the last album. And you know, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that was it. It was over. Time to do a new album. You know, so it flies by.
Thank God you did make a new album. I wasn't sure. I mean, as a fan, I wasn't sure whether you'd go, actually, it's time. No, not ever, but I mean, it's time, you know, take a break or whatever, because it has been pretty consistent. I think we're all a little bit shocked that the record has come around so quickly, but we're all really happy that it has, you know. Cool. I mean, in a matter of six to eight months, we're here and we're talking, and it's good, man. It's exciting times.
Excellent.
Nice. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.